Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, June 3rd. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, major heat wave incoming. Scandal ends career of Humboldt County Superior Court Judge. And Ha Cho Ka'ut Kinestet, Wailaki people on the river. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The North Coast will soon go from rainfall with moderate temperatures to dry with excessive heat. That's according to the National Weather Service in Eureka.
Yeah, we're going from two extremes.
That was meteorologist Jacob Boomsma, who shares more on the recent conditions.
We just had a little atmospheric river move through. It dropped about a couple inches of rain in Del Norte County and a little half inch to about an inch of rain in Humboldt with a little bit more in the mountains. So we had our late season atmospheric river. It looks like it's going to dry out pretty quickly and especially inland warm up pretty significantly into the hundreds in the interior.
With dry weather incoming, we asked if this recent rainfall will be the last until the fall.
It could be, but it can't be ruled out that we'll get more. It's not that unusual to get some June storms, but as of now, it's looking pretty dry for the next couple weeks.
In closing, the meteorologist cautioned that drier weather with hot temperatures increases the risk of wildfire.
There's already some fires further south toward the Bay Area, so fire season is coming upon us pretty quickly.
On Friday, CAL FIRE responded to yet another escape burn pile, this time off of Island Mountain Road within the Humboldt Del Norte unit. The fifth since the beginning of May 1st, when permit requirements were put into effect.
Yes, this is Jeremy Ward, Battalion Chief with the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit Fire Prevention Bureau. So just an update on the fire from May 31st that we had. That fire ended up being 3.3 acres and was reported to be the result of an escape control burn. And I was not on, but from the information that I received from our responders, it sounds like it was another negligently caused fire because the landowner left the burning pile unattended. And again, the fire escaped while not in attendance. So we want to remind everybody that there's a lot of people who are burning out there safely. The folks that are following the rules and the terms of their permit, those are the folks that we don't have problems with. Generally, the ones who we do have issues with are the ones that don't follow those permit terms. Like I've said over and over again, it's when you don't have clearance around your pile, you leave the pile unattended, and or you start burning and it gets windy. So all those are the ones that we commonly see in escapes, and these are all preventable fires. In some of these cases, in any of these cases where we're not able to have an officer respond to take action, we'll be consulting with the district attorney's office to see about any potential criminal proceedings.
CAL FIRE is preparing to enter its peak staffing period, with all stations and engines covered in preparation for fire season. Across the state, CAL FIRE has already seen 1,500 wildfires and over 34,000 acres burned. Helpful tips on how to prepare your home and family can be found online at fire.ca.gov. Kinestet Kunus, a Wailaki redwood canoe, has returned to the Ha Cho, or Eel River, after a 170-year absence. On June 1st, approximately 100 community members, including Native elders, Indigenous youth, and tribal leaders, gathered in Alder Point and floated to Fort Seward in celebration. Over the last 2 years, members of the Wailaki or Kinestet tribe have been carving a traditional dugout redwood canoe, with help from members of the Yurok and Wiyot tribes, who retained knowledge of construction, despite attempts by settlers to destroy their vessels. On Saturday, K-Mud News took to the river in a kayak with members of the tribe, and we share these voices from the river.
Having a dugout canoe on the Eel River for the first time in over 150 years is, you know, it's hard not to get emotional about it. It's an affirmation that we're doing good work.
We have to learn how to be true to our roots, but also adapt to the modern society, but also adapting modern society to our indigenous roots, making them knowledgeable that we are still here, and trying to kill that mindset that we're only in the history books, or like, there's...
That we're still represented.
Yeah,
we're still here,
exactly. So doing this with my family, first cousin, auntie, Uncle Perry, first cousin, it's all this... Oh, making our ancestors proud. Like, I feel them looking at us. This is the first time in over 170 years that our canoes are going to be in the water and we're going to be in there. And the fact that other natives are happy for us, it just shows our true connection in native culture, that we don't have jealousy. We don't have, like, oh, I wish I was us. Like, I'm so happy for you. Let me help, like, so you and your people have more connection with your people. It was really awesome. It's really, like, thank you.
Personally, I like to see, like, the passing of knowledge that all the tribes, like, you don't get to hear about their stories or their culture. So when we get together and just hearing their stories, it's like blessing. It's like a beneficial, you know, you get to hear something that you've never learned or heard before.
Before Yurok, there were people, spirit people that inhabited the world. And they knew that we were coming to inhabit the land, and that decided that they would prepare things for us. Some of those, we call them Wage, didn't want to leave. Some of them did leave. And a lot of those that stayed became landmarks or a particular item that could be used in our culture. And the redwood tree was one of those Wage. And their decision to stay was to be houseplants, canoes. We use redwood sticks to cook our fish. And in each of our plank houses, near the fireplace is a redwood stake, which signifies the heart of the house. And so just right off the bat, redwood has this spirit that came from before Nathi Khan, which is the time before man, is what we call it.
Like with our tradition, it's something we're trying to bring back for the youth, because a lot of the elders that we're losing a lot of our elders that have the knowledge for these types of things, and that's what they're starting to bring back for us. And for not just the youth, but just everyone in general, like anybody that wants to be a part of it, they're more than welcome to come and help and be a part of it, because that's what it's all about. It's just bringing people together and having a good time and bringing it back to where we came from.
Supporting fish dependent people, cultures, and food sustenance and sovereignty. And so it's protecting those cultural rights, you know, the rights to be on the river and learning our culture and practicing our cultural ways. And so that's really important that, you know, this is our wellness as well, and taking care of the lands and learning how to protect the lands. Those are just inherent, not only inherent rights, but inherent obligations that we as Native people hold and carry. You know, those are, it's just our connection to and gratitude for what is offered by the lands and the waters.
It's definitely very uplifting. I'm so glad that we have as much support as we do, and that just all these people are willing to come out and, you know, be a part of this with us. It's amazing, and at the least, this is just the beginning. There's a lot more to come.
Getting the community to see more of us and to see everything that's happening in a positive way. To have this canoe carved, the multiple ones, and to get them on the river, this is just, it's awesome to be a part of this and to see so many people involved in it.
It's happening now, and I'm really glad to be a part of it and still alive to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And I hope we have lots more, you know, in the future to come.
Our elders were silenced for too long, and so much is lost with them. And now it's our responsibility to try to get out what we remember and what's hot and know, and hopefully people will go, oh, I know who the Wild Ackies are. I know some, or I know their history and their culture.
Now that we are able to have, it's not like the rites are not brand new, but they're not very old either. And so for us, even though they've been existed, we haven't had like the backbone to be able to act on them or support them. And so now we're gaining more support and banding together to make sure that we are acknowledged that we are still here. We're not in the past. We are real living people, still living our cultural ways.
We're still here. We're not going anywhere. We are traditionally water people. It's something that's inherent in us. And when you put us in those spaces, yeah, you kind of see that inherent reverence and whatever it is that walks with our people. You kind of see it kind of blossom and come to life when we touch water.
We just heard from John Acuna, Hopa Valley tribal member and RAF guide, Minnie Want and Lauren Shoby Britton, Wailaki youth, Robert McConnell, a Yurok elder and traditional canoe carver, Johnny Garola, Round Valley Pitt River Yuki, Nicole Whipple, Round Valley Little Lake Pomo Yuki Nome Lackey Concow Madu with Save California Salmon and Native Health and Native Hands, Hotlet Singh Star Lincoln, Wailaki Hoopa, co-director of Native Health and Native Hands, as well as Tracy Spielman, Rhonda Hardy, and Natasha Carrico with the Eel River Wailaki. KMA News will be airing a two-hour special on Monday Morning Magazine next week from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., Monday, May 10th. You can see photos and videos from the historic day on the KMUD News Facebook and Instagram. Scandal has ended the career of a Humboldt County Superior Court judge. Gregory Kreis, formerly Judge Gregory Kreis, has resigned. Ryan Hudson reports.
Under the weight of more than 20 ethical and procedural violations, Humboldt's notoriously scandalous judge, Gregory Kreis, has been forced to vacate his post as Superior Court judge by way of agreement, rather than face the court's potential removal. These charges, leveled by the Commission on Judicial Performance last February, have rocked the local legal community. Kreis, who had vehemently denied each and every violation listed in the formal complaint against him while campaigning for re-election, has now formally admitted to his wrongdoings. Losing that election to his challenger, April Van Dyke, Kreis was set to ride out the year until January, when Van Dyke would take over. During the campaign, Kreis dismissed every ethical, behavioral, and procedural violation despite a mountain of evidence rooted in court records, interviews under oath, and additional witness statements. Since 1995, the commission in charge of oversight of California judges has only removed 13 judges, issued 45 public censures, which is where Kreis fits in, given 17 public reprovals, and had 114 public admonishments issued. Looking at the case against Kreis, of the more than 20 counts against him, the violations listed are nothing short of shocking. These included serious judicial ethical breaches, violations of California government codes, and multiple affronts to constitutional protections of due process. His courtroom conduct was described in the complaint as, quote, an abuse of authority, while his actions were said to be, quote, prejudicial to the administration of justice, bringing the judicial office into, quote, disrepute. The list of his misdeeds runs the gamut from inappropriate off-color comments about local attorneys to more severe instances of behavioral ethical breaches, such as calling a female attorney a B-word in open court. Even more alarming are allegations of criminal conduct, including an incident where Christ reportedly pulled down his pants and exposed himself to a sleeping female attorney at a private party. This was apparently witnessed by his now ex-wife, who detailed this interaction in a letter to the investigating body, which produced the report. The commission's filing most commonly highlighted a violation of Canon 2 in the Code of Judicial Ethics, which insists on, quote, promoting public confidence, which advises judges to avoid any appearance of impropriety both on and off of the bench. The commission's notice of formal proceedings cited several instances where Christ ignored conflicts of interest involving over 30 cases where he should have recused himself. The Code of Judicial Ethics states that a judge shall disclose information that is reasonably relevant to the question of disqualification, even if the judge believes that there is no actual basis for disqualification. During his campaign for re-election, when reached for comment on the matter of the judge being accused of open bias related to his refusal to disqualify himself even when presented with a conflict of interest, District Attorney Stacey Eads highlighted the importance of disqualification to maintain court fairness, especially in tight-knit communities like Humboldt County. She noted, it is not uncommon for judges to have been in practice as lawyers within the same community. Judges may recuse themselves to avoid the appearance of impropriety, she said. However, in Christ's direct response to the commission, he sought to distinguish between personal friendships and professional relationships, addressing rumors circulating in the community. He stressed the critical nature of keeping these boundaries clear while also seemingly not respecting them when addressed. When asked about judicial recusal and the importance of avoiding conflicts of interest, District Attorney Eads explained, a judge will have occasion to recuse themselves on a proceeding when circumstances arise. According to the Commission on Judicial Performance, Christ had failed in this regard. Amidst the turmoil, Humboldt's newly elected judge, April Van Dyke, emphasized the importance of impartiality during the election campaign, saying, impartiality is the cornerstone of a judge's role, and without faith in a justice system where judges make decisions based on the law and the demands of justice, the foundation of our legal system weakens. Van Dyke won the election convincingly, with just over 60% of the county vote, despite being dubbed an outsider, running a progressive campaign against an established insider in the legal community who many considered the embodiment of the local good old boy club, as it is said. Christ, now barred from ever being a judge again in California, has resigned, agreeing to the terms in a stipulated agreement filed on May 28th. The commission issued a scathing censure and bar, highlighting that in at least 44 cases over which he presided, Judge Christ had failed to disclose his relationships with seven attorneys, his familiarity with individuals involved in matters before him, or the extent of his relationship with the individuals. The commission's complaint against him also revealed that Christ had interfered in cases involving close associates, skewing judgments in their favor, and fraternizing outside of the courthouse with those attorneys and community members, all while handling court cases that they were involved in. The full consequences of Christ's resignation, such as its impact on his CalPERS retirement plan, remain to be seen. The Commission for Judicial Performance stated that the agreement and related documents would be made public if accepted by the court. Christ has already vacated the county courthouse, having signed the agreement in late April and being bound to it since then. In response, April Van Dyke told us she was deeply grateful to the voters of Humboldt County for their trust and support, adding that she was committed to restoring any lost faith in the judiciary and look forward to helping move Humboldt forward into its next chapter. Elected Judge April Van Dyke will be donning the robe and wielding the gavel as of January 2025. For KMUD News, this is Ryan Hudson.
Turning to Mendocino, KMUD's Matt LaFever brings the latest headlines out of Mendocino County, where a man allegedly threw boiling water on a relative, a former sheriff has passed away, and startling realities of health trends have come to light in this report.
This is Matt LaFever with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Monday, June 3rd, 2024. Let's begin with a story out of Willits, where yesterday, Sunday, June 2nd, deputies responded to an emergency call at Adventist Health Howard Hospital. A man had arrived at the hospital claiming he'd been attacked by a relative. Initially thought to be set on fire, it was later clarified as a boiling water assault. According to a press release from the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office, deputies arrived at the hospital around 9:56 p.m. They found the victim with severe burns from boiling water, consistent with his statement. He is currently receiving medical treatment. The incident took place in the kitchen of a home on North Highway 101 north of Willits. The altercation began as an argument about groceries between the victim and his relative, identified as Raymond Covino. The argument escalated and Covino allegedly threw a pot of boiling water on the victim. After the attack, Covino transported the victim to the hospital but left soon after. Deputies located Covino later and took a statement. Following interviews with Covino and other witnesses, authorities arrested him for battery with serious injury. Covino was booked into the Mendocino County Jail with bail set at $30,000. The victim remains in the hospital recovering from injuries. The investigation is ongoing. As a reminder, the charges against Covino have not been proven in a court of law. Under the principles of presumption of innocence, Covino should be considered innocent until proven guilty. Next up, we remember former Mendocino County Sheriff Anthony Tony Craver, who passed away this weekend at the age of 85. Craver served the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office for an impressive 34 years, leaving a legacy of dedication and service. Craver's career spanned numerous assignments, including a significant tenure as Coastal Commander. He became sheriff in 1998 after 27 years with the office and held the position until his retirement in 2005. His campaign focused on combating the county's methamphetamine problem, addressing juvenile crime, and improving response times. Mendocino County Sheriff Matt Kendall reflected on Craver's leadership and the impact he had on his career. He told us, quote, "Tony was the lieutenant on the coast, which was my first patrol assignment following my service in the jail. He later promoted me to sergeant in 1999. Tony was known for his strong leadership and caring nature. If you were ever called to his office, he made his points clearly and ensured his directions were known and followed by his deputies. He always ensured everyone left his office with their dignity intact," unquote. Craver was also remembered for his ability to manage tense situations with a calm and fair approach. Current Sheriff Matt Kendall said, quote, "I remember working the Redwood summer protests during the early 1990s as a very young deputy. Tony's briefings were always clear. He had a remarkable ability to calm heated situations and hear both sides. He often reminded us to enforce the law with respect for all and to treat folks accordingly without being walked on," unquote. In addition to his law enforcement work, Craver was a Marine Corps veteran and a pioneer in changing perspectives on cannabis within the county. Sheriff Matt Kendall said, quote, "Tony was the first to say that cannabis was not the big and the bad and the ugly. These were the lessons that served me well, and for that I am very grateful. Tony remained a friend to me following his retirement, and I will miss him." And now for a story on Mendocino County's health. Last week, the Mendocino Coast Healthcare District held a forum on community health, revealing some stark yet critical data from the California Center for Rural Policy at Cal Poly Humboldt. Community leaders discussed the challenges and their ongoing responses. Lee Pierre Oetker, a senior research analyst, presented data showing while there are a few bright spots, Mendocino County faces high rates of smoking, drug overdoses, homelessness, and firearm deaths, surpassing state and regional averages. The county also struggles with poverty, drinking, and car crashes, compounded by a shortage of healthcare providers. Senior research analyst Oetker said, quote, "Let's talk about poverty. The Redwood Coast has significantly higher rates of poverty than the state as a whole, Mendocino at 16% versus the state average at 12%. Poverty is linked to lower life expectancy, increased health risks related to obesity, smoking, substance use, and chronic stress, if people are living in poverty and can't access services, their ability to be healthy becomes very challenging, unquote. Oetker noted that homelessness in Mendocino County is about 3.5 times higher than the state average, saying, quote, in Mendocino, in the last point in time count, 1,124 people were identified as homeless. Mendocino has the highest rate in the state for homelessness, with 352 homeless people per 100,000, unquote. The California Center for Rural Policy recommends addressing smoking, substance use, and providing access to mental health care to prevent suicide. Dr. William Miller, medical director at Adventist Health Mendocino Coast, saw opportunities in the report, saying, quote, the three major contributors, accidental death, cancer deaths primarily from smoking and drug overdoses, are all potentially preventable. This gives us a chance to actually do something positive, unquote. A recording of the forum, the report, and Pierre Oetker's presentation are available on the Mendocino Coast Healthcare District's website. And that's the latest from Mendocino County. I'm Matt Lefevre in Hopland, reporting for KMUD News.
Healthcare advocates are speaking out against proposed cuts to a California program that provides in-home care aides to low-income seniors and people with disabilities who are undocumented immigrants. Governor Gavin Newsom's May budget revision would cut about 2,600 people from the in-home support services program to save an estimated $94 million. Dania Perea Alonso from Fresno is hearing and vision impaired. She says the program makes it possible for her sister to provide care.
My personal thoughts on the program being taken away makes me scared, angry, and anxious. Undocumented or not, we are all human beings who deserve health care.
Advocates want lawmakers to find a way to avoid these cuts. California faces a projected budget deficit of more than $27 billion for the next fiscal year. The legislature has until June 15th to pass a balanced budget. Ron Coleman Baeza with the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network says it would be cruel to cut the IHSS program, which he says allows people to live at home with dignity.
It is a poor fiscal decision. Without IHSS, these individuals would need costly and preventable hospital and or nursing home care, and family caregivers will go without pay.
Christine Smith with the nonprofit Health Access California says the state should not go back on its progress toward health care for all.
Everyone deserves access to the care that they need, no matter where they were born. When everyone is covered, everyone benefits, creating a stronger health system for all Californians.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Ryan Hudson, Ray Hamill, and Matt Lefevre. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.